T.C. Hill is not a doctor and does not claim to be a doctor or licensed in any type of medical field. Don't be an idiot and use anything heard on the show as medical advice. This information should be used for educational purposes only, and you should contact your doctor for any medical advice. Now get off me. Welcome to Kick It Naturally. I'm Kenna McEnroe, and I'm here with T.C. Hill, author, natural health expert, producer. What's up, T.C.?
It's a new week and a new day.
Why
are we all wearing the same clothes?
I don't know. We've been sleeping here all week like this. We also have Will Schmidt. How's Will doing today?
I'm good, thanks. Totally fresh and new for this New Days podcast.
So this is part two of a podcast we started last week. It was all about plateaus with weight loss, and a lot of people out there have issues with this, myself included. And so if you didn't hear the last podcast before this, then you should go back and listen to at least the beginning part, because that kind of lays out most of the whole podcast, but especially the beginning, because that lists out all the reasons that you could be holding on to weight or not able to drop any. So you'll want to listen to that. And if you haven't followed us yet on Facebook, what's the hold up, people? Come on and like us and follow us at Kick It in the Nuts.
I think pretty much everybody has by now, right?
Six listeners have followed.
We hit 120,000 today.
Whoa.
That's like grown up.
That's pretty big.
It's bigger than
Iceland. Holy crap.
Yeah, holy crap.
Did you say holy crap?
Yeah, holy crap.
That's a good word.
Today, all of our listeners can get a free audiobook from audible.com. Just go to kickitinthenuts.com/audiobook for more details.
So with a sponsor, I didn't know how it was going to work, but it ends up they just gave us a jet. It says Audible on the jet.
Oh, lame.
It's kind of lame.
So embarrassing.
Kind of ruins the whole jet.
Right.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Post questions there and we'll answer them on these podcasts.
And, you know what else too? I don't know if we'll have time to get to them today, but we threw in a couple of the Ask F and Tony from the website submission where people go there and they ask questions sometimes. So if you have an issue that's maybe too personal and you don't want to talk about your butt leaks or something, and you don't
want to talk about it on the podcast.
We'll talk about the podcast.
And we'll say your name.
And address.
But not your full name and your phone number. We'll list your phone number so people can call you.
Your social security. Uh-huh. Your everything.
Right. So that's another option for people anyways.
All right. So let's just dive right on in, because the last show was a long one and we didn't hardly get to any of the questions because mine took so long because I was one of the examples.
We had to give
Kenna
a lot of attention, right?
Uh-huh. So, Cheryl, I'm 37 and I'm currently 132 pounds. I've been trying to lose 10 pounds for 2 years through diet and exercise. I've been doing high-intensity interval training, sledding, and heavy weights. I've even tried reverse dieting and cutting. I don't know what that is. I haven't been under-eating, and all I eat is good stuff. I haven't been able to lose an inch or a pound. Why?
I don't think she's talking about the cutting where, like, it's a mental issue.
I hope not.
Hopefully not. What's reverse dieting? Like, you just eat anything you want? If it's...
It's probably, like the cyclical loading where you spend, like, a week eating more or, like, nights eating more.
Right, which can be a really good thing to do for a lot of people.
I'd like to try that.
Yeah, like, so let's talk about cyclical stuff a little bit, Will.
Yeah.
Especially with carbs.
Yeah.
You know, maybe, like, you know, how... we find that to keep insulin low that we like to restrict starches and things that would really spike insulin high. However, a lot of people have mineral levels that are so low that if they bring carbs down too, their cravings will go through the roof or they become an unreasonable human being. I didn't mean to look at you, Kenna, when I said that.
Ah, shut it.
But, you know, so they need more carbs.
I'm gonna cry now.
But, so they need more carbs. To function and to feel better, but there's ways that you can cycle it a little bit. So maybe talk about some different things.
So there's a couple books I'll mention in answering this, but the gist of it is if you don't have enough like digestive strength to break down proteins and fats, it's not a good idea for you to just cut out carbohydrates, even though that could, like, theoretically push you more into a fat burning mode. if you're not able to digest fats and that sort of thing, your metabolism is just going to get all wacky and you're going to freak out.
You're going to be miserable.
Yeah, it's not going to work. You're going to binge. Your body's going to overhaul your diet, make you eat carbs because it doesn't want you to get a seizure. So you've got to fix digestion first before you try that. But then there is some real legitimate thinking with people who will do carb cycling. And it doesn't work for everybody, like we talked about in the last episode.
Yeah, so
like
listen people, to part one, too.
Yeah. You spend a long, good amount of time talking about...
You mean I wouldn't shut up.
Yeah. That's what triggers, you're... like how it's not okay for everybody to do this free day diet binge thing because you have different metabolic responses when people do that. But when the body is kind of balanced and the digestion's working decently and your insulin level or your insulin responses are okay, it can be a beneficial technique to do carb cycling where a couple times a week you have like a meal that's a little bit more carb heavy and it can sort of trigger your endocrine system to keep your metabolism revved up and your muscles like sufficiently saturated with glycogen. So Rob Fagan talks about that in his book, Natural Hormone Enhancement,
right,
where it'll be not a crazy thing. He doesn't do like a free day. He's like a starch-rich dinner a couple times a week, like spread out. Like
yeah, he does more of a like, I'm going to do this once every 10 days. And yeah. There's a couple other guys that'll do it once a week or something.
And, yeah.
And other guys, and depending on your weight training and your desire to add muscle, it might be appropriate to do it even more often.
Right, like in John Kiefer's book with Carb Night or Carb... Like I think there's like three that are out, but one of them talks about eating higher glycemic sugars post-workout, like post-workout shake and a post-workout meal, which can be a really good thing if your body's balanced, your digestion's working well, your insulin response is good, and you're training hard, and you eat the carbs after, and those sugars too go to your muscles. And I personally have been benefiting from that.
Right.
But there's a time in my life when that wouldn't have worked that well, like when I had been doing the whole free day diet thing, and any time I ate any sugars, I would just like binge uncontrollably for the rest of the day, right. You know? And that was for sure. My insulin response was nowhere near as balanced as it is now. But that can be helpful to do that occasionally, but it's not necessarily appropriate for everybody.
Right. And so let's talk a little bit too about people who are not working out intensely and not looking to add muscle and that kind of thing. You can also cycle carbs in a gentler manner. So say that you're doing a lot of what we consider medium carbs, like yams, maybe berries, sweet potatoes, even white sweet potatoes, butternut, squash, stuff like that, that has a higher carb level, but maybe not something that would spike insulin so high that it's going to restrict fat burning. But so if you're a person that needs to use those type of medium carbs, usually, you know, each day, you can also cycle it to where maybe one day you have hardly any, and the only carbs you consume are through non-starchy vegetables, like, you know, broccoli or zucchini, you know, stuff like that. And then on another day, you have a lot more carbs. So maybe some days you're just doing maybe up until 3 o'clock. I have people cut off carbs a lot at 3 p.m., and that allows them a long stretch of the day where insulin can come down and the body can access stored fat. And that's an effective little trick for a lot of people. But maybe one day a week you have a lot more carbs. Maybe you have a couple of sweet potatoes and some berries, or, you know, it's a higher bolus of carbs on that day. And then another day you just do the normal amount, and another day you do none at all. And this cycling can kind of just freak your body out enough a little bit to kickstart some activity.
Wake up your metabolism like it was asleep for a while because it was on autopilot, and now it's like, whoa, we just got an influx of carbs, baby.
Yeah, it's a simplistic way to view it, but I think that's okay
I'm
to view it that
person.
Way. Yeah, good job.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, George from Killeen, Texas, once 270 pounds, now 194. Good job, George. That's
nice.
Good.
Way to go, George.
He just wanted to brag so everybody else that's on a plateau will get pissed off.
Right. That was his goal there. But, you know, maybe he had a lot of plateaus before and finally pushed through them and wanted to motivate everybody. But, you know, one thing, too, we didn't really hit on with Cheryl is, you know, don't view that just because you're doing the right workout stuff, don't view that as enough. So many more times it's It's more about your physiology and what's going on with your body and how it's processing the foods that you're eating more than it is, am I working out right?
I think I have a really great question.
Okay.
And I just thought of this. Like, you know how everybody, no diet is right for every person and everybody has imbalances in this. Well, could that be the same with exercise? Like, certain exercises are just not good for certain people while others are better for that person, or it might push somebody into a crazy, I don't know.
Yeah, in I think it's chapter 17 in the fat book, we talk some about how if you're dealing with a specific imbalance at the cellular level, maybe you're too anabolic or too catabolic, specific types of working out or... I got in trouble. I was tapping and it goes on the mic. You hear that?
He loves to tap, y'all. He's got these tap shoes tappy. On and he just taps away.
Yeah, I got yelled at. But anyways, so... frequency of working out can affect those imbalances and stuff. So from person to person.
But the actual type of workout, like.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Depending on whether it's, you know, a cardio or intense or, you know, weight bearing, all those kind of things. We talk about in the book a little bit about how to gear those towards specific imbalances. But as far as types of workouts, certainly a person would not want to go and do a, you know, CrossFit class on their first day of working out ever. That's an intense, difficult you know, thing for a lot of people. And a lot of those gyms are not great at bringing someone along slowly. But as far as restricting specific workouts for people, I mean, what do you have thoughts on that?
I do, yeah. Like, I'll see a lot of people that are borderline or severely low blood pressure doing things like hot yoga. And it's just the worst. Because all you do is go in there and lose electrolytes. Right. And then you, all those problems like weaker digestion and spaciness and cravings are just going to be super exacerbated. Wow. So when you have low blood pressure, you don't want to lose the little electrolytes that you have. So you would do much better to do shorter, more like intense, like in a muscle work where you're not sweating a ton, but you're stimulating kind of lean muscle mass. Whereas someone who has an electrolyte excess issue would potentially really benefit from sweating out extra toxins and lowering their blood pressure. So that's a factor. And then if you're someone who doesn't have a lot of lean muscle mass, but you're trying to lose fat, like doing a lot of low intensity cardio wouldn't be the most effective thing. Mm-hmm. Like it would benefit you a lot to do some more strength training kind of work to build up your lean muscle mass a bit to keep your metabolism higher.
And higher cardio levels?
Not necessarily, no. Like if you're low muscle mass and you do a lot of cardio, you tell your body to shed weight total, like muscle and fat, right?
Oh, okay. I see what you're
saying. So if you just do like a bunch of like an hour on the treadmill, you kind of like you're telling your body, don't build any more muscle right now. We're just like spending calories.
So people that need to build muscle, then they have to do the weight training and less of the cardio.
It would help them more because then their base metabolism would be higher and they'd be burning fat while they sleep and it'd be a more effective way. If you're someone who doesn't want to put on any muscle mass at all, though, a mix of the two might be appropriate. But like Tony was saying earlier, like you don't want to necessarily do anything. Exercise you're not ready for, because if you get injured, you're not going to be able to work out at all, and it's going to hurt, you know, elevate stress levels. So you want to make sure that you're not doing something crazy ballistic or plyometric or that's not right for your body alignment. So we had a whole episode on arthritis and joint pain where we talk a lot about body alignment. There's all these videos that I made to help correct your alignment, but that's a really important foundational piece of the puzzle to include to make sure your movement mechanics are correct. And there's certain exercises that, like, for example, biking or something like that where you're seated, that might really be bad for your posture, and that would be an overall bad thing to do if it causes you pain.
And one thing that we could hit on while we're on this topic kind of is that if you are working out regularly and you're not a beginner and it's going well, a great thing to move past if you feel like the results are slowing down is to increase some type of intensity in what you're doing. And that could mean that maybe you do some heavier weights still with a correct form. It could mean that you do more repetitions. It could mean that you are integrating some type of high intensity cardio into a cycle workout that you're doing, like this morning yeah, we had a fun thing we were doing with Kenna and some of the other girls. It was fun to watch you guys do it. But every set that they did, they would go and run up the escalator and come back down and then go and do another set and then run up the escalator again. So it was just a way to change the intensity level in there. And when you have been working out for a while, your body adapts to what you're doing in a manner that the muscles learn how to perform whatever you're trying to get the body to do with the least amount of effort. And that's great in life if you're a hunter and chasing after, you know, deer or whatever all day trying to get your food. It's great that the body can learn and the muscles can learn how to adapt to that to perform more efficiently. But that's not great if we're just trying to lose weight. You know, so sometimes doing things to shock the body and do different exercises and do a different type of workout altogether. And maybe if you're hiking, you go and you just walk on flat. And maybe if you're walking on flat, you do an elliptical or you hike, you know. So changing up things is really a big deal.
Also, yeah. The times that you talk about in your book, like when do you do, like how long do you do cardio? Do you do it before your workout or do you do it after your workout? When do you eat? What do you eat afterwards? I mean, those are all really specific too.
Right, and so that may be too much to cover in this show, but that's, I think, in chapter 17 of the Fat Book too, and I think we talk about that a lot.
We could have a show on that. Workouts,
exercise, timing.
Right, yeah, that would be good. Nutrition, according to exercise, nutrition.
We had thyroid too.
Exercise, thyroid.
And what was the
calories.
Other? Calories, a calorie show.
Calories.
We just got three new shows to do.
I don't got time to do all these.
Oh, shoot.
Yeah. Okay, so, yeah.
Cool. All right, so William from Volano Beach. Were you going to say something, Will? I think I interrupted you.
Never mind.
I'm sorry. You can slap me.
I don't even want to talk anymore.
Oh, poor baby.
We'll make it a three-part show.
We'll make a Will show where it's just Will. Okay. William from Volano Beach, Florida. Tony, I have a pulled hamstring. Other than surfing all the time, drinking German beer, and hitting on girls half my age, what should I do, bro? I added the bro because I saw his picture and I thought he would say bro.
Yeah,
or
he
dude.
Would say bro. I think that's it. I think you got it.
Set.
Yeah, you're all set. Next question. And thank you for sharing on-topic questions that had anything to do with what we were talking.
But his hamstring, what can he do? Just
let
it rest?
What can he do about his hamstring?
He should go to mybodyofknowledge.net / pain relief videos, and you can check out the overall body alignment video on the website there too, mybodyofknowledge.net /pain relief. And because the pulled hamstring is coming almost definitely from misalignment in your body alignment. So you can check out the videos there that can help teach you what correct alignment looks like and show you exercises you can do to help fix that.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. All right. And maybe hit on some older girls.
Yeah, okay. Some of those younger girls can get a little freaky. Maybe that's how he pulled his hamstring.
Yeah.
So
exactly.
It also depends how old he is.
Like
if
he's 22. At a certain age, you start getting a little pervy. Jonathan from Manhattan, New York. Let's go back. With a plateau, is it more important to change up your workouts or something with nutrition?
Dun, 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 dun.
I don't know.
Almost always nutrition.
Yeah, you always say it's like 80 or 90% of it.
Almost always going to bring more results than, but sometimes it's a little easier to change up something with your workouts, so why not mix up all that stuff?
Well, and it totally depends, right? Like if you're doing all the right things with your diet and maybe the workout is something to look at, you know?
Mm-hmm.
If your workout's watching television, right. Maybe.
But or you do the same thing all the time.
Right.
Maybe time to switch it
like,
up.
I remember this one professor who was like maybe 70 pounds overweight and he swam a mile every day for like decades.
Uh-huh.
Obviously not doing anything anymore. You can just float with that much body fat. Like,
right.
But like you were saying in a little bit last time, like changing it up is really important. And part of it is because when we do the same thing all the time, we get really efficient nervous systems. Like that professor I knew, he could just swim really easily. But when you first start swimming,
so
doing a
hard
lap, you're like freaking out. You're using all these extra muscles.
Hard.
It's kind of like when you first, if you start learning an instrument like guitar, like your whole body is so tense, you're like sweating. But as you get more efficient, you just use the muscles you need to use. So like cross training and mixing up and doing new things can really spend a lot more nervous energy and a lot more like muscular activity as your body is like trying to learn the motion.
Right. So if you're doing all the stuff that we teach in the books and the courses, then it's great to mix up your workouts. But if this is like your first time hearing us, I guarantee that there's some nutrition issues that you could be improving that would make some changes.
Yeah, and if that dude was swimming a mile and a half every day, I mean, what the heck was he eating? Like, just tons of sugar or whatever he wanted?
They had
an
open bar. He was a Jesuit, so they had unlimited alcohol and food all the time.
Oh, wow. Wow. All right. Kelly, in the first 6 weeks on Kick It, I lost 2 inches. I've been stuck the last 5 months since, but I think it's because my urine pH has been too low and I'm stuck in a catabolic state.
You know, that could be a factor. And, you know, of course, in part one, we listed a lot of things that are other possible causes. So Kelly could do well to, you know, listen to that a few times because, you know, when we listed so many so quickly, it's pretty easy for something to blow by you and you might miss something that is relevant for you. But yeah, if your urine pH is really low all the time, then that can reduce the strength of insulin. And so that may affect your ability to process carbs well if you're eating a lot more, if your blood pressure is still low and you still have to do a lot of medium carbs and such. So Kelly's actually been playing with me and a couple of other people in the support group on Facebook, and we've been doing some testing on this with urine pHs. So maybe we'll talk about this more in another show after we see what kind of changes we bring about.
Simon, good idea for a show, guys. So why is it the last bit of weight the hardest to lose? Also, does the body store toxins in body fat? So when you're losing fat, do toxins go to the bloodstream and make us feel unwell? Thanks, all. Yes, they do.
Mm-hmm. One thing that's fun, you know, we talked in last week, in the first part of this show.
Wow, this week flew.
It really flew by. about, you know, we were talking about how we've seen a lot of toxicity stuff with Kenna. And one thing that's great is that when she's eating perfectly, she almost always breaks out because the body is just removing so much junk from the fat cells that were stored that the body's like, okay, this is too much. I'm going to push some out through the skin too. And we've talked on other shows about people who are on medications for a long time. They can be off for a year, and when they start losing weight, they'll start having side effects from those medications again because those toxins are coming out and going back into the bloodstream. So yeah, all that stuff is true. And Will, do you want to talk? I don't know if we've ever talked about why, you know, if somebody has 30 pounds to lose, why is the first 20 a lot of times so much easier than the last 10?
Yeah, well, I think part of it's like your body's own built-in survival mechanisms where when you start to get down to like essential body fat layers, like I've gotten down to 4% and like going below that, like is your body's freaking out because like you really don't have any energy reserves at that point.
You're like that mannequin that met when you're below 4%.
You can see my intestines.
Yeah. Right. You can see a heartbeat.
But I remember reading about like Jerry Rice. He was down in that low and his doctors were telling him, you need to eat ice cream, dude. Like this is dangerously low. And because your body, like it does have like a very long history of being built to survive famines and times of like not enough. So it gets really resistant to losing essential body fat layers. And the closer you get to 0%, like the more resistant it is to let go.
Right. So like we talked about in part one, it's not that you can't do it. You can't. It's not that you can't lose that last 10 pounds. It's just that you may need more things going in your favor, more things working optimally in your body for your body to be at a state where it feels comfortable enough to let go of that extra money in the bank.
And all that stuff about feeling unwell, I remember when I first started with you, like the first couple of weeks, man, I couldn't keep my eyes open. I was like falling asleep. I felt like crap. I had headaches. It was just all that stuff coming out of me, like years and years of Twinkies and everything else. And so, yeah, you'll feel like crap at first, but then after the first couple of weeks, you'll feel great.
But think about this also, too, is that, you know, we know that you were running on carbs when you first came here, and that's what you were eating because you couldn't digest protein very well.
I liked them.
Huh?
I like them.
And you like them. But you, there's a reason that you like them. There's a reason that people like them, and it's because they work for them. But so as a person changes what they're eating, if they can't really digest protein or emulsify fats correctly, they can't run on that fuel yet. And so they start feeling lousy because they removed their main fuel source.
Mm-hmm. Avery, does anyone ever get totally free of burping and gas? Is that even a realistic goal?
I think you gotta have goals, Avery.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, so...
I don't want to fart anymore.
Right. So I think that it's not a requirement that all gas is gone and that all burping is gone. For some people, it can depend on where their esophagus meets the stomach. And, you know, some of them meet high, some of them meet low, and that can create some burping issues. If you have a hiatal hernia, that can create some burping issues. You know, drinking carbonation can create burping issues. So, even when we digest, that sizzle that happens when the acid meets the bile can create some gas that the body might want to remove, but you're reducing a lot of those gases when the food is no longer rotting and fermenting. And that's the big deal. So if your gas is like foul, you know, things are not working right. It's not doing that well. So a goal should be for your gas not to be foul and for not to be burping a lot for most people. But that doesn't mean that you can't have things fixed and still be dealing with some gas or some burping, depending on how your body structure is set up.
Yeah, and there's certain foods that, when everything is going right, they cause gas. They
digest further right, down the line. Right. FODMAPs and stuff like
exactly,
that.
Exactly, yeah. So, like, beans are notorious for that. Like, it's the flora, healthy flora in your stomach. Yeah, broccoli also. That's when things are going well. Those things cause gas, and it's not a bad thing. It's just like a ferment from the flora in your intestines. And that's different, though, than like chronic gas where everything is just happening all the time and your body's not processing things right.
And people look at you and just punch you in the arm like, don't do that.
Yeah,
you
know,
you
didn't, right.
That's an issue.
So I don't think it is a realistic goal to like be like, I never want to have gas again.
Right.
And if you do drink sparkling water, which might be really good for your chemistry, you're going to burp. And that's fine.
Yeah, I've been drinking a lot of sparkling water and I'm just like, yeah. You know,
and that happens.
It's real attractive. Okay.
But well, see, the thing is that the confusion that she comes from is that, you know, a lack of stomach acid, we know, causes a lot of burping. So that's a sign that stomach acid is not good enough. And as you improve stomach acid, most people see that improve. But that doesn't mean that it needs to go away completely for everybody.
Did you know that on x-rays you can see gas?
Really?
Because you had these x-rays taken for coming into the country, and there was all these little bubbles, and he asked on Facebook what it was, and somebody was like, it's just a fart conjuring, it's just gas, and all these like nurse students like weighed in and said, that's gas.
Wow, I did not know that.
Yeah, you can actually see it.
X-rays or MRIs?
It may have been MRI. It was like a three-dimensional kind of photo thing. Laura from Los Angeles, California. How do you know if it's a plateau or just where your body wants to be weight-wise? That's a good question.
It is a good question.
Because I keep telling myself, okay, maybe your body just wants to be here, but then my clothes say differently. And
I think what's more importantly is where do you want to be, you know, as a person? Is where are you happiest wherever your body is? And when you factor in, okay, where do I feel good? Where do I fit in my clothes that makes me happy? Where do I get to eat certain things that I want to eat, you know, that may not jive with that goal? You know, it's a balance in there somewhere that you kind of have to figure out for yourself. But I don't think it's a situation where I still have 30 pounds to lose. I'm not happy here, but my body seems happy here, so I'm stuck. I think that's a fiction.
You're looking right at me.
No, I'm just talking. Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying that, you know, there's something else going on that you can work on to improve that.
I mean, I see really common in LA, a lot of people want to push their bodies to be way skinnier than they should be. And that's when they're getting, like, they're missing their menstrual cycle, they right. can't think straight and all that sort of, because they want to be emaciated model, runway model thin. And that, I think, is not a healthy thing, although it may be good for their career.
Right. And so, that's a good point, is that, yes, your body is probably not wanting to be there in that emaciated, unhealthy state.
Yeah.
So that's valid.
Jackie was 350 to 360 pounds, got down to 235, bounced to 250, and have been here for a year, no matter the workout plan, cutting carbs, 1,200 calories, then to 1,600, cleanse, reset, paleo, 40-40-20, don't know what that is. I do beach body programs, alternating strength days with cardio days. I walk 2 to 3 miles with my dog every day that weather permits. I have PTTD that limits my impact cardio, but you would think by now something would happen. I have one cheat meal a week, no tea, no soda, water, and one cup of coffee daily.
So first of all, Jackie, way to go on the 100 pounds or so of losing weight. That's not an easy task. You did awesome. So be in your glory for a minute. So with someone that is trying all these things, and it's very common, a lot of times what's missing is it kind of doesn't matter what you eat if you can't process it. And that's the biggest thing that we talk about. So if you haven't taken our free 4-week digestion course, it's a big deal. And if you can get through that and that's not a problem for you, then look at some of these other factors that we've been talking about, or read the book, or take our 12-week fat loss course. And because there is something else that's restricting your ability to lose weight. It's always something going on. And usually, since you're really changing the way that you're eating, most likely it's an inability to break down the foods properly so you can use them.
Yeah, and all these things you mentioned were set diets that are just like generalized protocols that some people have had success with. And chances are, like, you're an individual like everyone else and needs an individualized approach to look at what's causing the issues in your case. And it could be a multiple factors, and possibly rooted in digestion and some of the things that you'll learn if you take the course, either the free digestive one or the fat loss course.
Right. So you got to look at your own physiology to get ideas what's appropriate for you, not what's popular or what worked for your friend. And that's a really big deal that a lot of people never get to learn. So you may have just made some big progress by showing up.
All right. We're going to do the Ask F and Tony questions too?
Yeah, let's do a few of these. We have time.
Okay, Tiffany from Pensacola Beach, Florida. I've recently been having problems with a magnesium deficiency. Although I get almost all of my nutrients naturally through foods, I also have an ulcer, and the medication is preventing me from absorbing the nutrients that I need. The Charlie horses are severe, but my ulcer is also not healed. Is there a natural way to heal an ulcer without blocking my nutrients?
So it's a good question. Right off the bat, I'll tell you that if you have a magnesium deficiency, you're not getting all the nutrients you need from your food. And if you have an ulcer, the opinion that's out now and has been for quite some time is that they seem to have proven pretty legitimately that ulcers are caused by bacteria. It's not like we used to think where someone was had too much acid in their stomach and it was burning a hole in their stomach. It's bacteria in the stomach, and it's usually H. pylori or some other issue that is creating that ulcer. So if that bacteria is able to live in your stomach that way, you don't likely have enough stomach acid, which means that you're not breaking down your food properly, which means that you can't pull minerals out of your food. And if you're getting Charlie horses, that's a strong low calcium tissue symptom. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, sure. So like calcium is required to allow the muscles to function correctly. And in the case of spasms, like, they don't have enough calcium to stay in the relaxed state. They just freak out and trigger. And probably also low on electrolytes in general. Mm-hmm. If you're having these issues like weak digestion and cramps and that sort of thing, and medication that's probably blocking all of your stomach acid.
Right. So that's and I have had a lot of people say that sometimes to allow that ulcer to heal, that they use the horrible PPI drugs, and that they use it for, you know, 2 or 3 weeks, try to do whatever else they can to do to allow that ulcer to heal, so that you can then increase your stomach acid and correct digestion so that you can break down food properly. Even though I'm against the PPIs and I don't like to see anybody turn off digestion, I'm not totally against doing it in that case if you can allow it to heal and if stomach acid is not going to allow it to heal. But understand that you got that way from the lack of stomach acid.
Yeah. we should clarify, like, how that works is when you take the PPI, it starves out the H. pylori, right? Like, those are
right,
the bacteria that lives off of hydrogen.
It's a, you know, a PPI is a proton pump inhibitor, so it blocks your body's ability to make that hydrogen, which is needed to create HCl, hydrogen chloride. So, and that's also what the H. pylori bacteria dine on. They eat that hydrogen. So when you turn it off, it's supposed to kind of starve them out so that they die. But they're hard to kill off. It's a hard thing to kill off, but a lot of times you may be able to turn it off long enough to allow that to heal and wipe out enough of them. So then once you're done, you could then put in stomach acid to keep them from overgrowing again and coming back in such a force.
Yeah. And is there a page on Kicking in the Nuts that has like an H. pylori protocol? Or
yeah, yeah. If you search for H. pylori on there, there's a protocol that can help wipe that out. Also, you know, glutamine seems to be very healing to the intestinal tract in general. So maybe that might be something you want to do away from food to see if that helps accelerate the healing a little bit.
All right, Michelle from Sacramento. I was just listening to the podcast, Understanding Cravings and Binge Eating, and also just finished the one about digestive problems. I'm 34, 292 pounds, and have been dieting since age 7. I found out a few months ago that I have celiac disease and actually gained 5 pounds since cutting out gluten, and I've only eaten a few processed gluten-free items. I also had my gallbladder removed at age 18. Enough background. What do you do in the case of trying to balance the gut, stomach acid, etc., when you don't have a gallbladder? Do you still produce bile from somewhere else, the liver? Could this be an additional reason why I'm having so much trouble losing weight? I also had gone from 312 to 240 before I was pregnant, and while pregnant went back to 287, and 2 years after giving birth was when I was diagnosed with celiac.
So there's a lot of stuff in there. So let's hit on a few of them. First of all, it can be a big mistake when somebody goes on a gluten-free diet because, like she says, that she's not doing all of it, but they go to the store and they buy everything that's gluten-free, and 90% of gluten-free products in the store are garbage, just without gluten in it. Mm-hmm. So they're still going to spike insulin and make you gain weight. They have just junk in them. Gluten-free food is just food. It's just food without grains and gluten in it. And we've also, you know, Will and I have been talking about and researching a lot of things that it seems that it's not the actual, the gluten is not the actual problem. It seems to be other cofactors that are in foods that contain gluten that are causing a lot of the problems. So I'm still fine with somebody going on, you know, removing gluten from the diet or removing grains altogether. I think it's a great thing to do, especially if you're having issues like celiac or any digestive issue. But don't change it into gluten-free products because it's going to cause a problem.
Yeah. The main doctors who research, like, influence the whole gluten-free movement, which is now the most popular diet trend out there.
Everybody's always I can't have gluten.
He recanted his whole thing. Like, he's like, oh actually people did just as well on a total gluten diet versus a gluten-free.
Oh my gosh.
Because it was other things that are usually contained in foods that also have gluten that were the problem. But the problem is, like, when you're gluten-free products that normally have gluten, they're extra processed. They're like these grains that have been even more processed than
just
usual.
Like low fat. They'll make it up with some chemical.
Yeah. So if you have an actual real gluten allergy, it's like sends you to the ER. It's not like, oh, I'm bloated. It's like you got stung with a bee and you're allergic to bees or peanuts. It's like you can die.
Right.
If you eat gluten.
But so don't view what you're trying to do as completely wrong. Just view it as the explanation may be a little bit fictional. But a lot of the steps could still be the same and you could still see great success from those steps. And one of the steps that I like to see, we could talk about this right now for a second with the plateau, is that for some people that are on a plateau, you can fix digestion, but if a food has been causing a problem for a long time, any semblance of that food can still cause a problem for you and create a burden. If your body is so used to attacking this food when it comes in because it wasn't digested before, But so this happens a lot with grains and dairy and legumes are the most common ones. So if someone's having a lot of issues and they are having a hard time seeing progress, I'll tell them, go just do a clean month where you don't do any grains whatsoever, no dairy whatsoever, no legumes whatsoever, and just see how you feel, see what happens. And if you do well, then put some of those foods back in one at a time so you can see if you can figure out if there's one that's presenting itself as a burden to your body. And I see a lot of people, they get crazy results from that. If you're having autoimmune issues or something like that, there are other things you need to remove as well if you want to do this clean month, kind of testing things out. But for most people, it's grains, dairy, and legume. And that's why this gluten-free diet does so well for so many people, is because they remove grains when they do that. And it appears that it's a lot of the other compounds in grains, or the grains' difficulty in actually breaking down for a lot of people, that are causing a lot of the problems, and it's not the actual gluten itself.
Right.
So that's one thing to look at there. Another thing to look at is, yeah, your gallbladder being gone is a big deal. There are steps you can take. Take our free 4-week digestion course, and we have a whole page of video that explains exactly what you should do if you've lost your gallbladder, and you can use like ox bile things to kind of simulate proper digestion. It's never going to be as good as real digestion, but you can kind of fake it and see some improvement.
All right, JJ from Baton Rouge, Louisiana. I like the logic of your plan, but the diet looks like the Atkins diet. I have tried this diet before, and there was never a moment while on this diet that I wasn't hungry. I don't believe I could follow it again. Also, I've heard that ketosis is a danger with this diet. Well, it's actually nothing like Atkins.
It's really not. So Atkins is all about moving your body into a state where it's burning fat all the time. That's the goal. You want to be in ketosis so that you're always burning fat. And that's not the goal in our diet. A lot of people are not set up to remove carbs altogether, and we talked about that a little bit in part one. But another factor, just to help you understand what may be going on with you, is that it sounds like you can't process fats and protein correctly, because the Atkins diet is pretty much just proteins and fats. And if somebody does that and they feel lousy, they have no energy, then they're not able to turn those foods into fuel.
Yeah. I mean, if he were to ask himself, did you do the Atkins diet while you were sure you had sufficient stomach acid and great bile flow? Did you do that, JJ?
No.
Because that might have worked better for you, possibly. But it's also still not that simple either, because like the kinds of fats and the kinds of proteins and the salt levels and all those other factors like that you want to look at when you learn how to measure your own body chemistry are all going to play into it. So it's not any one diet. It's not the Atkins diet. It's not the paleo diet. It's not the South. It's a nuanced diet based on your chemistry.
Mm-hmm. Right. But just what's fun to talk about is that what you presented gives a lot of insight into what may be an issue for you, because you want your body to be able to burn fats and to process fats correctly, because that allows you to consume fats. And if you can consume more fats, it can sustain your energy longer than carbohydrates.
And they taste great.
And they're delicious. It also makes your body feel like, okay, I'm getting fats every day. I don't have to hold on to this fat that I have stored. So for a lot of people, even to move past the plateau, by increasing dietary fats, as long as they can process them correctly, it can speed up fat loss.
Yeah, I don't know how many times I've had a friend that they've come over, I've cooked, I've done, whoa, what are you doing? Why are you, that's olive oil.
That's saturated. That's cooked, yeah,
and
right.
I'm like, no, you have to have it. And then I just like, okay, then don't eat it. But I'm not going to go through the whole explanation. Read one of Tony's books. You have to have fats, you know?
Yeah, and people have been, we were scared away from fats in the 80s. Everyone in our industry now knows that that's false. There's like three guys that are still carrying this banner of low fat.
And they probably have horrible bile function.
Right.
And they're probably all fat.
Right. So it's a fiction, but we do also know that you need bile working correctly to efficiently use those fats. So that's important to check out. And you can do that in our free 4-week digestion course on kickitinthenuts.com.
All right. I think that's all the questions. It was a two-show questioner. We had a lot there. But if you want to learn more about how to look at your own chemistry, you can read any of Tony's books or take the free 4-week digestion course at kickitinthenuts.com. You can also check out Will Schmidt's stuff. He's at mybodyofknowledge.net. And he's got a lot of exercises and a lot of cool stuff on there and body alignment and stuff that you can check out. And, you know, he's helped me with a lot of things, too. So check them out, people, and we'll see you next week when we talk about something exciting.
Right, and thank you very much for everybody who's been leaving us reviews and rating the show on iTunes. That helps us move up the charts and get more exposure. So if you heard something you like, swing by and rate the show for us.
Bye. Bye.